At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with your usual host, myself, Hayden Guys, and James Coker. We have watched the Brazilian Grand Prix. And before we get into it, I just want to say, roll the tape back. Roll the clip from last week's podcast, the preview of Brazil. Who said Max Verstappen was going to win? That's right, I did. I predicted it. You can't write the man off. He's a wet weather demon, and Brazil provided what Brazil provides. Absolute incredible racing, chaos, entertainment. It cooked. I think Brazil, hands down, one of the best races this season. Really, really enjoyable. What was your thoughts?
I agree 100%. It was one of the best races of the season, if not the best race of the season. And Max Verstappen winning the race in the wet from a P17 start was a real Dutch treat.
Would you say it was one of the best wet weather drives? Because that's what a lot of people are putting up there, is one of the best wet weather drives by a standard of wet weather drives. Is it up there? Is it the best?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not a Formula One historian enough to make that judgment call, but
best
it was
you've
incredibly
seen, then,
impressive.
From the time that sure. You've been in the sport?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And I do, Hayden, need to give you your flowers, because even though we knew going into the race weekend that Max Verstappen was going to have a 5-place grid penalty regardless of where he qualified, you stood by your man. I'm like, this is your man. And you're like, yeah. I'm like, you're going to stand by him. You're like, yeah, that's my man.
Yeah, you know? I was close not to, as I said, I was going with my head on my heart. And I was like, you know, the heart wants the championship fight. But the head says that it's going to be Max Verstappen and the championship's going to be pretty much over after Brazil. And those other
two spots on the podium, Enchanté, yeah. Bienvenue, Je suis la jeune fille, où sont les toilettes?
Voulez-vous c'est avec moi?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I was also just saying the only French things I knew. I said... I said, enchanted, welcome, I am a girl, and where are the bathrooms?
I don't know what my one means, but it's from that song.
I think it's Do you want to sleep with me tonight?
Oh, okay. Well, then that's a good way to start with the podcast.
Anyway, double Alpine podium. Nobody predicted this.
Well, nobody predicted, but no, okay, no, I can't. Not even I can wrangle that one. No, amazing result for the team.
Incredible. In broad strokes, before we get into some of the specifics, McLaren really set themselves up for success and set themselves up not only to give themselves a huge gap in the constructor standings post Sao Paulo Grand Prix weekend, but also they set themselves up for Lando Norris to take a considerable chunk out of the deficit between him and Max Verstappen. And it seemed going into the race after he got pole in the Grand Prix that was going to happen. And then of course we all know that's not how things shook out, but let's quickly talk about sprint, shall we?
Yeah, let's get into it.
We're both rocking Alpine gear. I'm drinking my French seltzer Le Croix.
We kind of swapped this episode. Usually, James is doing them bright and early in the morning, and I'm doing them in the evening. This time around, James is midnight for James. It's 8 a.m. for me, so I'm on the coffee today, and you're on the liqueur.
Yeah, it's actually pronounced LaCroix, and I think it's originally from the Midwest, but it looks like this is made in California now. But I like to say LaCroix because it sounds fancy in French. Mm. And I'm drinking the pink can, Pamplemousse.
Pamplemousse.
Which is French for grapefruit.
Okay. Sounds like something else then, but let's move on to Sprint Quali and Sprint Race Weekend.
Sprint Quali, we had a McLaren front row lockout. Oscar Piastri, the tasty pastry, getting pole position for the sprint race. McLaren looked good. And then they looked pretty good in the sprint race too. But then came the drama.
Their race pace, I feel like, kind of just dropped off a little bit. Red Bull have been very much up and down this season, but I think Brazil was a really good weekend in terms of performance of the car. Qualifying, usually with Red Bull, they're really great in qualifying recently, and in the race, they just drop off. There's no race pace. Mm-hmm. They really struggle, and I think this weekend was kind of a little bit more opposite. Whilst they were still really good in qualifying, at least in the sprint, in the dry conditions, the race pace was good from them, especially in the sprint race. So, yeah, it was good to see that from Red Bull to sort of at least have a fight between the two teams. And, then McLaren, of course, were trying to work out their best implications to give as many points to Lando, weren't they?
Yeah, it was just, it felt like poor team management from the jump in the sprint race, because you heard Lando's frustration like as early as like lap 7 in the sprint race, where he was like, I thought we talked about this. Hmm. I thought we had a plan. If Oscar, you know, took the lead on the first few laps, we were going to swap. And they're like, we're going to do it. Just relax. And he said something to the degree of like, whatever. Like he was, you know, he was clearly upset at how things were shaking out. And then you had Leclerc like right on his heels for the majority of that sprint race, to the point where like they didn't really have the gap to safely swap positions without threatening having Leclerc and Max both pick their pocket, right?
Yeah.
And when there were times when it seemed like they should swap, they just weren't doing it. And so I don't know whether it's they felt like they didn't have a big enough gap, or whether Oscar didn't want to give up the lead for a while. I don't know. What do you think was going on that pit wall?
I think Oscar Piastri didn't want to give up the lead of the race until the end to show to people that I should have won this race, but I'm doing the best job for the team, rather than do it straight away. And then, you know, people kind of forget about, oh, the drive that he had and that he was the better driver in that race. He did it it took as long as possible. And, you know, he slowed down to help Lando. He slowed down to make sure that Lando had DRS on him so that he wouldn't be overtaken by Charles Leclerc, because Lando was making a few odd mistakes that kept on just pulling him back to the Ferrari and to the Red Bull. So I think Piastri was much better in that race. And of course, you know, on merit deserved the race win, but of course also for the championship, it makes sense to switch those two over. Even though it's only for one point can always make the difference in any championship that you're fighting for. So was the right call. They did just get very lucky with the getting it VSC. Done before the VSC, which we can talk about a little bit as well, whether, you know, there is the speculation of the FIA delaying it to allow that to happen, because it was fishy. I mean, I'm not going to call out anyone for biasness or anything like that, because you just don't know what's going on in the background. You don't know how these teams are operating, but you allow yourself to be open to that interpretation when something like that happens. Like the yellow flags were out for ages. Hülkenberg's car was parked up. And I think for a while they just wanted to keep the race going and not have to virtual safety car it. I believe I read somewhere that the virtual safety car really only came out a few seconds after Hülkenberg got out of his car. But again, I haven't got really, you know, trustworthy sources for that. I could be completely wrong. But it did take a while. And as I say, it is fishy that then, as soon as they've swapped positions, okay, now we're going to throw the virtual safety car.
Yeah, they got very lucky that VSC was about to come out, and they were able to swap it when they did. And then that was pretty much the race.
Mm-hmm.
Max didn't really have much of Max and Charles Leclerc didn't really have much of an opportunity to challenge those McLarens on the front. But that's how it shook out. But let's talk about quali for the Grand Prix.
Quali in the race, all in one day. How was that for you? Because for your time zone in America, how was that?
I didn't watch it live. So it was going, quali was at 2:30 in the morning my time.
Nice, nice, good.
So and the Grand Prix was at 7:30.
Okay.
So I woke up at 6:30 and I watched recording of the quali without checking my phone, and I fast forwarded between like the lull,
the red flags,
like Q1, Q, yeah, and all that nonsense.
Yeah, I think it went on for 2 hours total.
Yeah,
the actual qualifying session. Yeah,
and so I was just fast forwarding through it, and then was able to finish watching it right before the race happened. But I thought it was exciting qualifying session. Like. Yeah. I people don't like having same day quali sessions, but I don't mind them. I'm used to them when I watch Formula E because they do everything in the same day. A lot of fans didn't really seem to like it. I know teams hate it because if cars bin it, they don't have time to fix it. As what we saw with Alex Albon, Williams just did not have enough time to get that car ready to race again, which was super unfortunate. But I thought it was an incredibly exciting qualifying session.
Yeah, fully agree. It had a bit of everything. You know, you had your drama, your crashes, your incredible laps, bravery. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. 2 hour long qualifying session, definitely dragged on for a while, but was worth it. And same day qualifying sessions, they're excited. They happen every once in a while. And you're like, oh, okay, we're going to get qualifying the same day. This is interesting and different. But I think, Formula One compared to Formula E, I think the cars are just a lot more complicated. There's a lot more components to them. So, and obviously a lot more expensive as well.
And to their credit, like Formula One cars are much faster than Formula E cars.
Yeah, definitely. But in terms of just like the rebuilding,
But I mean, because they're faster, I feel Formula E cars are less prone to crash the way Formula One cars are.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but it was interesting. Both Williams binned it, Sainz binned it. Both Aston Martins, to the point that even Albon didn't even get prepared for the race. Albon didn't even get the chance to take part in the race.
And it sucked because he was having a very good qualifying session.
Yeah.
At one point, he was up at P2. I think his time ended up qualifying in P7.
Yeah.
On the grid. But there was a moment, I think, with like 5 minutes left in Q3. Where he had like the second fastest time or something like
that. Yeah, he did.
He was looking good. And like a bunch of socialists during the French Revolution, there were a lot of red flags.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of red flags, I think we definitely need to get into the Verstappen red flag and the difference between all of the red flags being brought out. I feel like, again, I'm not going to call out anyone for biasness or dodgy doings, but again, it allows yourself to be open to that interpretation when the rules aren't consistent and things like this happen. There was moments in I think it was Q3, Fernando Alonso, maybe it was Q2, but I think it was Q3, Fernando Alonso's crash, red flag straight away. And I think other ones are a red flag straight away. But the Lance Stroll one, I'm pretty sure it was yellow flagged. And then it went on for a while. Now, I don't think that was the reason why Max Verstappen didn't make it to Q2, because as soon as the yellow flag came out for Lance Stroll's crash, Charles Leclerc crossed the line at the same time and went faster than Max Verstappen and dropped Max into the 11th. So regardless of if a red flag came out, it would have been touch and go whether Verstappen would have made it through regardless of that situation. I heard that Alonso's one was because of it's like a trigger on the car. If it's a certain crash, it triggers on the car that it was a high G-force crash, and a red flag potentially needs to be shown straight away for something like that. So that's what I saw. But the one in terms of Max Verstappen that everyone's in uproar about, and even my girlfriend messaged me in the morning, like the first message in the morning was just like, F1 is rigged. And I'm like, I don't want to get into the Max Verstappen versus a British driver debate again. The relationship might not survive another one of those. I was just like, oh dear, that's a shame, isn't it? Is it rigged? I don't know. I think F1's always been a little bit dirty throughout its history where there's been some dodgy doings.
I think there is an element of professional wrestling that dips into Formula One sometimes.
Yeah. I think it's on the line between, it doesn't know whether sometimes it wants to be a sport or an entertainment, because sport, those lines are blurry because sport is entertaining. And yeah. I think, you know, Abu Dhabi 21 is a prime example of, you know, a referee getting involved to make things exciting and making sure that things ended that weren't, you know, an anti-climax. And I think, you know, potentially there are little bits within there, and we've seen it throughout the years. I think, you know, Ayrton Senna, Alan Prost in 88, where they came together, Senna was able to carry on and then got disqualified because he cut the chicane and didn't do the full track. What they wanted him to do was drive back onto oncoming traffic.
Yeah, they wanted him to go into reverse,
which is ridiculous, but he got disqualified for that, and it was a French governing body for Formula One to allow a French driver to win. Again, might not be biased.
Classic Balestre.
But it makes it look dodgy at the same time.
And then I think like a year or two later, all of them agreed to change the rules and then you could drive through that turnoff. And then Senna got mad and like left the room.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think a few years before that, when he was driving in Tolman, Monaco, chasing down his first win, was, you know, closing in on Alain Prost, was much quicker than him in the wet. And he was signaling obviously for red flags, and then they obviously red flagged it to stop that charge from Senna. Again, might just be because of safety, but at the same time, it also looks dodgy. And I think Formula One has always had an element of that throughout.
They wanted a Frenchman to win in Monaco, because I think he was going to catch Prost in just a few laps, right?
Yeah, he was literally on his tail, like right behind him. So F1's always had a bit of a history of dodgy doings and interesting stuff. I mean, look at Crashgate. Did they know about it? Didn't they know about it? Felipe Massa wanted to sue and all this. Like, they don't do themselves any favors sometimes. And I think this one, whilst I don't think that was the reason for Max Verstappen being knocked out of qualifying, allowing certain drivers to finish their lap is unfair, because you know that they, I think what they did was they saw Stroll crashed. He was at the back of the train. There was a big gap until other drivers caught up to him. They were like, okay, we're going to let these guys finish their laps. And as soon as someone catches up to Stroll, then we'll have to give out the red flag because they're getting into a dangerous situation. And at that moment, you choose, you know, maybe not picking individuals, but you're choosing a select group of drivers that will get to finish their lap and drivers who don't. Same thing as in Abu Dhabi 21. You're allowing Lewis and Max to fight for the win, but you're not allowing Carlos Sainz, who still had lap cars between him and Max, to fight, of course, for that win. So it's just, you're unpurposely picking certain individuals and giving them an unfair advantage.
You should have a segment called Dodgy Doings with Hayden.
Dodgy Doings. I mean, F1, I reckon, has a big history. That's just four that I know that are quite famous ones. Sure. Whereas I feel like there's so many throughout the years.
100p. Yeah. But qualifying was absolutely insane. Lando ended up getting pole position. George Russell, P2. And then some real surprises. Yuki Tsunoda in P3, Esteban Ocon P4, Liam Lawson P5, and both Aston Martins in Q3. Yeah. Like, it was so refreshing to just see that Q3 lineup like mixed up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, incredible. What I really, really loved about this was the post-qualifying interviews. They interviewed George Russell. And then obviously, then Yuki Tsunoda comes in, and the height difference is so absolutely different. Incredible. And then you have the picture of them at the end, the top three of the qualifying order always have that picture together. And they were standing basically in height order, because Lando's sort of like the middleman between George and Yuki, and then obviously Yuki's height as well. But yeah, that's what we love about wet weather sessions. And it's always, we spoke about it, it equalizes the field. It makes it more down towards, you know, drivers' ability in the wet, but also their ability to find those grippier parts of the track. And yeah, I think those guys absolutely smashed it. It was incredible to see from both the RB drivers, both, of course, fighting for that Red Bull seat. So both trying to do the best performance possible and showcase that they should be the one to be promoted. So yeah, brilliant performance from both of those. And Esteban Ocon, who I feel like is massively overhated in Formula One. I think he's a really, really good driver. I'm excited to see what he can do in a Haas that seems to be improving next season. I'm not too sure on whether they had the same components on the car this weekend, but I believe that they were running, it's my understanding that they're running different specs of the car. So Ocon is running an older version, and Gasly's got newer versions. So the fact that he put that up into P4 with an older version of the car, incredible performance.
And I think you're right. I think Esteban Ocon is overhated. A lot of people forget in his formative years in karting in Formula 3, what a prolific driver Esteban Ocon was. Like in Formula 3, he was competing with Max Verstappen for the F3 championship. Yeah. Like, you know, at the time, people thought Max Verstappen was really good, but Esteban Ocon was like another rising star coming through the ranks at the time. And, you know, you could make the argument that he hasn't really gotten the opportunity to really prove himself because he's always been in a midfield team.
Yeah.
And of course, will continue to be in a midfield team when he goes to Haas next year, but he's never had the opportunity to drive for a top four team. So yeah. We don't really know what his ceiling is.
Yeah, and that's just the nature of Formula One, isn't it? I think famous rivalry that I think a lot of people don't always know is Martin Brundle, obviously, you know, pundit and commentator of Formula One now.
Sure.
Former F1 driver in the junior categories, was going toe-to-toe with Ayrton Senna, and they had a rivalry, yep. And they were very, very closely matched in junior categories. And then, of course, when they got on to furthering their career, Senna showed to the top teams that he deserved to be there, whereas Martin Brundle didn't quite reach the levels that Ayrton Senna did. You know, went up against Michael Schumacher in Benetton and wasn't as good as Michael Schumacher in that car. So it's just always interesting that some drivers can be so good in junior categories, but then as soon as they get towards the big time, towards Formula One, they're still having an amazing career and they're still doing amazingly. But you know, those rivalries of the junior categories, one person always then shoots up to the top and just keeps on improving.
You also said he wasn't as good as Michael Schumacher, who like,
well, yeah, but
that was his teammate, but like, you know, it could have been the same situation if Ayrton Senna like was his teammate was Michael Schumacher when he started, because like I don't know who his teammate was at Tolman, but I'm sure whoever the hell it was, he was dominating them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Martin Brundle's teammate having to be Michael Schumacher is a little different and harder.
Yeah, but is it though? Because you know, you go at the end of the day, your teammate is the one that you're most closely matched to, because on the majority of teams, at least at the start of the season, you have an equal car. I think in Formula 1 nowadays, those lines are a bit blurred. And, you know, I look at State, for example, and Zhou's probably not had the same car as Bottas for the majority of the season. And I know that, in Alpine as well, Ocon's not had the same car as Gasly for the majority of the season. But back then, I think it was different. And, you know, going up against Michael Schumacher, he would have wanted to beat Michael Schumacher. Michael Schumacher wanted to beat him, but you know, the better driver clearly, you know, stood out, and Michael Schumacher went on to have an amazing career from that as well.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Now, before we get into it, broad strokes, if this race had been a Molly Ringwald film, you could say it was the Breakfast Club.
Mm.
But you could also say it was Pretty in Pink.
Okay.
Do you know who Molly Ringwald is?
I'm guessing it's a director, a writer.
No, she was an actor. She was like one of the most famous actors in Hollywood in the 80s.
Before my time.
She was in a movie called The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. And so I did a hilarious racing pun calling it the Break.
I know of the film The Breakfast Club, and I did get Fast Club. Don't worry, I did get that one. Pretty in Pink.
Also a great movie.
I think that one's a bit more of a stretch.
It's a great movie. But also, broad strokes, this race was like the national dish of Brazil, a bowl of feijoada. Are you familiar with feijoada?
No, I'm not. Well, enlighten me.
It's a stew of black beans with various types of pork and beef.
Okay.
Typically served with white rice, sautéed kale, sliced oranges, among other sides. And
sliced oranges?
Yeah, it's like a side.
Okay, yeah.
And like this, like a bowl of feijoada, this race, the wetter the better. You know what I mean?
Okay.
This race, this race was wet. It was juicy. It was beefy. It had steaks. That's also a meat joke. And it was mixed together in just a cacophony of flavors. We'd love to see it.
Very, very well done.
But going into the race, I think everybody started on enters. Nobody started on full wets, right?
No, the wets are useless. The wets are a useless tire in Formula One. Lewis Hamilton actually during the rained off qualifying, Stefano Domenicali was walking down the pit lane. Him and Lewis were together, and they managed to catch a conversation between those two where Lewis goes up to him and was like, when are you gonna get us out here? Like, it's fine to go out. And he was like, give us actual good wet tires, tire blankets for them, and we could go out in this. And Stefano Domenicali was just like, kind of like trying to politically push it off and just be like, I want us to go out as well. But it made a great point that I completely forgot that, you know, they don't have the tire blankets anymore, which makes the wets even more useless. I think also the spray doesn't help, which has been exemplified with these cars, because they're ground force effect cars. Not only are the wheels and the tires throwing up what is like 65 something liters of water per second, I think it is, which is an incredible amount of water thrown up in the air. But because of the way the cars are made, that's sucking everything that's under the car and spitting it out backwards as well. So therefore, because I remember they did the test with the skid. I can't remember what they're called, but the things that go over the tires to stop the spray.
Yeah, they were putting like spray covers on the back wheels, like trying to catch the spray. And
the spray
was
exactly the same, like because it's all coming from the underneath of the car. So yeah, the wets are just a useless tire now in Formula One, and if we're going to start on wets, it means that we can't start at all. They're just good for clearing up the track if we want to do that. That's all they're kind of really good for.
Like a Zamboni in hockey, if you've ever seen a Zamboni smooth out an ice hockey rink.
Yeah, I think if we're going to have really wet weather tracks, we just need like a couple of spec cars, kind of like a safety car. But a couple of spec Formula One cars that have full wet tires that go around in equidistant locations that just clear up the track ready for us before the race so that we are ready to go.
What if during the race there was like a vacuum car that just drove ahead of everybody at all times?
wide, really, really fast. And it's just
sucking clearing up the water.
It's like, I don't know if you know a show called The Teletubbies.
Of course.
Yeah, everyone, it's like Nunu going around.
Which one was Nunu?
He was the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, okay.
So that would be him going around, sucking up the track. I love that.
So everybody started on inters. Of course, Alex Albon was out of the race. They could not get the car ready in time, which was a shame because he qualified very well. So that P7 spot on the grid was empty. And then, of course, in the formation lap, in typical Lance Stroll form, Lance Stroll spun out. And then it was on the pavement, and then like looked like he was going to be able to get back on the track pretty easily. And then he decided to drive through the gravel trap and beached himself. An absolute comedy of errors. Hayden, this guy is your boy. You are like probably Lance Stroll's biggest fan. How can you explain what happened?
So he was dragged into there by an invisible force, maybe. I mean, spinning on formation lap, mistake. These things happen. We've seen, it's not the first time we've seen someone spin on a formation lap. But driving into the gravel, is a bit of a silly one. Could have reversed and gone to the right. Could have tried to spin it round in the location. I think he just tried to get back going as soon as possible. I mean, I'd like to see a driver's POV from that situation. Obviously, we can see from the T-cam, oh, there's a big patch of gravel. What's he doing? But we have a view advantage being higher up. Lower down, I don't know if he saw that there was gravel there. Of course, he should know there's gravel there from doing a track walk earlier on in the weekend. But in the moment when you've just spun on the formation lap and you're probably thinking, shit, I need to get back on the track as soon as possible. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to lose my grid star. I've got to start from the pit lane. He was starting in a... I think he was on the pit lane anyway, wasn't he? Or was it just Alonso? No, Sainz was the only one from the pit lane. So he was starting in the top 10.
No, he was starting in P10.
Yeah, so he was starting in the top 10. Yeah. So obviously he wants to get back as soon as possible to try and get that position back. But, then, of course, either didn't see it because he's low down or just completely forgot that it was there and then just drives into it. Or I can drive through this if I just keep the momentum up enough, which usually cars can do. They can drive through gravel if they can keep the momentum up. As soon as you start to slow down, that's when you're going to get beached. But obviously didn't have the momentum to get through the thing. And it's a big, big mistake. You know, I'm not sugarcoating that and saying it's not a mistake, guys. This is this reason or that reason, making excuses. It's still a big mistake and something that he's going to have to, you know, live with and go and explain to those engineers who spent so much time trying to fix his car and get it ready for the race. And then he's just, you know, straight away, it's not even started the race because of a silly driver error.
Yeah. I'm not even going to hate on Lance Stroll here, but when I saw like his interview after the race and also him in the press conference, he seemed like dissociated. He seemed like he just did not want to be there. And I understand the mentality of like being upset with having like a bad weekend, but I don't mean he didn't want to be physically there at that moment. I felt like he did not want to be in Formula One at that point.
I think he's always been like that in terms of interviews. I think it's hard when, you know, you're a driver who will get ripped apart no matter what you say, no matter what you do. I think he is he's in a fortunate position, obviously being born into and being a bit of a Nepo baby, of course, you know, being born into and having the opportunities that he's been given. But at the same time, you know, that's not necessarily his fault that he's been given those opportunities. And I think he gets a lot of hate, and sometimes people need to remember that we are all human beings. And
we
should go with a little bit of kindness at the same time. Whilst you can be obviously calling out errors and stuff like that, I think sometimes with him it gets far too far. And I think, in terms of interviews, it's like probably for him, what is the point of me giving this interview? Because regardless what I say, no one's going to care and people are still going to be hating on me, whether I'm a friendly person or a nice person or I'm a Kimi Räikkönen and I don't talk at all. So, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. So they were getting ready for a second formation lap. Meanwhile, Carlos Sainz is just sitting, chilling in the pit lane. So he had a pit lane start. Then like we saw this like stall from Bottas, Colapinto, Verstappen. And there was like that weird miscue from Lando, the starting procedure infringement. I'm trying to correct because they had the aborted race start. They're going to redo the race start. Pit crews ran back out. Formation lap in 10 minutes. Did the starting infringement happen after that or before that? Trying to remember.
The start was abandoned, I believe. And I believe there's two terms of phrase, which are race start abandoned and race start aborted. Actually, I think it was aborted, not abandoned. Abandoned, I think, is where they go and do another formation lap, and by the time they come back around, everything will be okay, ready for the race start. Whereas aborted, I believe, is stay on the grid, mechanics are coming to you, we're going to get the cars. It's basically like another pre-race grid procedure. And in that confusion, Lando Norris pulled away. I think he got away with getting a harsher penalty and only a a fine because he said that he was preempting what other people behind him were going to do, which I think is a weird excuse, but anyway. And then all the other drivers, their excuse was, well, Lando did it, so I just followed him, which again is not necessarily always an excuse because there's a car stuck in the gravel, there's a truck on the track, regardless of whether you're driving slowly. Obviously, you know, we all know what happened in 2014 Japan. We don't want an incident like that ever happening again in Formula One. So, you know, let's not be driving whilst there are cranes and tractors out on track, please. And obviously that's why that's in place.
It was just like a comedy of errors. It was just a kangaroo court. I had no idea what was going on. I feel like the people who were running the show didn't know what was going on. Meanwhile, while all this chaos is happening, Carlos Sainz is just chilling in the pit lane, like, I don't know, listening to Enya.
Like, it must be worse for him because he's just getting soaked, isn't he? Like, he's just sat still, just getting rained on at that point. Yeah. Soggy. Soggy Sainz.
As well. So they finally, like, they set up for the restart. They, of course, have to remember that they have to leave the P7 grid spot empty, as well as the P10 grid spot empty, which I feel like is also confusing because typically you just fill into the empty spot in front of you when you're done with the formation lap. It's like second nature. So to remember to have to leave those blank, I think, must have also been like a little I don't know. It just throws them off, I think.
Yeah.
but you have George Russell take the lead on turn one. And we're like, yabba dabba do, let's do this. Max Verstappen immediately starts making his way up through the grid, starting at P7, made it to P9 by lap 5, P8 by lap 7, and was already putting up fastest lap on the board by P7 or P8. Checo spun out early into the mud, pushing him to the back. You had drivers going off the racing line to try to keep the tire temperatures down on those enters. Like, from your experience, is this fairly common in wet races where they have to go off the racing line to keep the tire temperatures down?
Yeah, in a drying track, obviously, intermediates are interchangeable condition tires. When it starts to get a lot drier, obviously, like I said earlier, these cars, even the intermediates, throw up a lot of water, clean the track, basically, and create a drier line. And in doing so, you'll create more tire temperature if you drive on a dry. If you drive on intermediates on a dry track, those intermediates are going to get hot very quickly, and a hot tire loses its grip. So, in order to cool down those tires, you drive on straights on the wet patch of the track. So you move off the racing line and drive onto wet patch of the circuit, and that will just cool down the tires on the dry part before getting back over to, of course, the racing line for the corners, so that you have the best possible tires through those corners, giving you the best grip and obviously giving you the best speed through the corner.
How long do you need to stay off the line to properly cool the tires down?
I'd say at any opportunity. So through corners, wet weather driving is different to dry weather driving. You will find drivers doing different lines. I was incredibly annoyed at the rest of the grid when making it so easy for Max on the first lap, who literally drove around the outside of the Curva de Sol turn three on like two free drivers, I think it was, when we've all seen in that famous overtake that he did on Nico Rosberg at that corner. And he said after, I was testing and I found a lot more grip out there. So nobody decided, oh, I'm going to try and do that. Instead, it was like playing the F1 game where the AI just stays stuck to the racing line. And you're like, well, I'm just going to do this and overtake everyone. And that's exactly what he did. And it was the same down in towards turn one. Kept on braking really late on the inside, finding the grip. And it was only really Charles Leclerc that defended that inside line and was able to defend from him in that moment. Everybody else made it so easy for him because they just... And that's why Max is so good in the wet, because he finds the grip and he works out what's quicker and what's slower.
I agree with you. Like, I was really surprised because, like, I remember lap 10, we saw Max pass Piastri for P7. No fight whatsoever. Piastri was not trying to defend that position whatsoever. Lap 11, he passes Lawson for P6. Same thing. Lawson didn't put up a defense at all.
Well, Lawson's part of the same team, so he's never going to put up a fight.
But yeah, it's just like he was in his own world and in his own race. And it's like they were like the ghost cars that he could just drive through.
Yeah, literally just driving around them. But yeah, coming back to your wet weather question, how long to do that? Yeah, through the corners, you wouldn't do it because you could potentially spin out by driving through puddles. Out of corners, you want to be careful of spinning up the tires on wet patches, which obviously we saw some drivers do later on, causing incidents. But as soon as you've got any point of that the car is very comfortable in a straight line, you get over to that wet stuff, you cool down the tires, and then you get back over to the racing line just before the braking. So you just got to try and, at every opportunity, cool down those tires if they're getting to a stage. And it's driver feel. It's something that they will be able to feel when the tires heat up, because, you know, they're in these cars so often. They know what feels good, they know what feels bad. And if they start to feel a little bit of the grip fading away from them, they can work out, oh, that's my tires are overheating, so I need to get into the wet stuff to cool them down.
Yeah. You know who was feeling bad? Sir Lewis Hamilton. Lap 9, he was criticizing the car, saying it was incredibly bumpy. He went off track lap 12. He was not happy with the car the entire weekend. I think he already said in an interview that he can't wait for Christmas because he'll be getting ready for
getting in red
Ferrari. Yeah.
What's Santa bringing in? Brand new Ferrari.
You know, I'm sure he's very grateful he had that moment at Silverstone, and so many fans are grateful that he had that win at Silverstone, and it was like a nice emotional moment send off for him, which will most likely, I mean, we still have three race weekends, but it most likely will be his last
Grand Prix win
for the Silver Arrows. So at least he has that, but I think he cannot wait to get out of that car.
Yeah, I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat right now, conspiracy theory hat. This whole season, since obviously he announced that he was going, they are using his car as a test to improve Mercedes and make things, so basically try out all the things on that car. And some weeks it's going to work, some weeks it isn't. Now, if we remember back to the start of the season, Hamilton was nowhere with Russell, was always good in the races and would be able to catch up, but he was underperforming compared to Russell. Now, there was that email that went out or something like criticizing the Mercedes team of bias and not supporting George Russell and only supporting Lewis Hamilton. And then as soon as that email, and they sort of disregarded it, all of a sudden, Lewis Hamilton starts fighting for podiums again and fighting for race wins. Summer break happens, and Lewis Hamilton is back to being miles off the pace in qualifying, struggling with the car. And what's race pace again, you know, closing back up to Russell and being close to each other on track, but not quite where they were before the summer break. Meanwhile, George is still having those performances where he's finding himself nearer the front of the grid, especially in qualifying. And I think, you know, they are getting ready for Kimi Antonelli and just testing everything, testing the things that didn't work. And we've seen this before from Mercedes. The start of the 2022 season, when the car was dreadful, they allowed Russell to drive with a normal version of the car and the best sort of version of the car to get those results and sort of build him into the Mercedes team. But Lewis, as the experienced driver, would of course know and be able to give better feedback for the car and the development. So they were testing a lot more things in terms of ride height, suspension, all this sort of stuff, all these different tweaks on setup to try and work out how to get the best out of this car. And I think that's what they're doing once again. They are tweaking things on the car, and it's going to make it worse, of course, but sometimes you need to make things worse before you can make it better, because you need to find out what doesn't work to find out what does work. And I think that's what they're doing to hopefully, for them, try and have a good car for 2025 for Russell and Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah, you might be right. But he was just having a tough race. Lap 20, he said the car was not drivable. It was a bummer to see him have that kind of performance in Brazil, because you know how much he loves Brazil, especially with the connection to Ayrton Senna. Ayrton Senna being his childhood hero, his idol growing up. He always wants to perform well at the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. It was a bummer. But before we get deeper into the race, I want to ask your opinion on this incident that happened earlier on lap 4 when Ollie Bearman bumped the back of Franco Colapinto. But there was like no real damage, and like Ollie Bearman's like, what? There was no damage. Like, he didn't lose the position. Like, why is there a penalty? Do you think there should have been a penalty?
Surprised by that. Like, yes, okay, sometimes the outcome, I don't know. Formula One's a weird one. Like, is the outcome of the incident what should be penalized, or the incident itself? And I think if you go the incident itself, of course, he hit him, so penalty. But then again, you look at it, nothing happened to Colapinto. I don't think there was any actual damage to his car. He didn't lose a position. But Oliver Bearman did. He spun. So he's already taken a penalty for that mistake. So therefore,
and then he got another 10 seconds. And then he got the 10 second penalty.
So I don't think he deserved it. I was also very confused about that. It's like on the F1 game again, where somebody's spun on the track right in front of you, and you haven't been able to react in time because it's happened just literally right in front of you, and then you get slapped with the penalty, even though you've literally, there was nothing that you could do. That's what it felt like. It felt like it's something
that
just
happened to me so many times driving F1 24. I'd be driving an F1 24, and someone would take me out, and then I'd get the penalty. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they hit me from behind.
Are you sure about that?
I think so.
Are you sure about that? I think it might be the other way around. I think you.
All right, whatever.
But it was like an automatic trigger system. Like the computer detected contact. It was like penalty straight away.
Yeah. For sure. But because of the two formation laps, we went from the original 71 lap race count to a revised lap count of 69.
Nice.
Lap 25, the rain was really coming down. Leclerc pits put on new enters. Lawson went off the road. Lap 26 cost him some positions. Norris surprisingly wanted to pit early. Like, I think he was focusing on the undercut to Russell.
Yeah, he was just focused on trying to get past Russell.
Yeah. And McLaren said no because Leclerc pitted for enters and he's now stuck in traffic in the middle of the grid. Mm. We're not going to pit yet. And then, of course, Hulkenberg spins out, yellow flag, VSE is out. Russell and Lando decide to pit lap 29. You know, Checo changed the full wets. Hulkenberg found his way to start the car, but I think he ended up getting outside assistance. So
yeah, he got
the
pushed.
Black flag.
He got sort of beached because when it happened, his front tires were off the ground. So he's just kind of beached in the middle. That's the problem with these F1 cars that are so long that if there's anything that gets stuck in the middle of the car, then they're just completely beached. And he got a little bit of a push. And I think he knew, but it was one of those things where it's just like, because obviously as a driver, you know, so you would probably also think, why don't you just tell them to stop? Well, it was like doomed if you do, doomed if you don't. He was beached. There was no way of him to continue. So I think he was just hoping that no one would have noticed, despite it being a very, over broadcast sport where there's cameras literally everywhere, even on his car, that would have seen someone pushing it. Which, you know, this rule, I understand it from some sort of essence of getting outside assistance, but sometimes this is just a bit like. Same reason I would have liked Hulkenberg to continue. It's just a small little push that he got to carry on, which is such a big shame that he got disqualified for it. But at the same time, I understand it's a rule, and you know, there'll be other reasons why outside assistance shouldn't be allowed in the sport as well. So I do completely understand it, but I was just a little bit like, come on.
Yeah. But at that point, the visibility on the track looked awful. Like, it looked like they were driving through a baby pool. Like it looked like they were driving through like 6 inches of water. It was like, it was insane. But you had Esteban Ocon leading the race, lap 29, with Verstappen 6 seconds behind. Lap 30, you had Esteban Ocon P1, Max P2, Pierre Gasly P3. Gasly up 10 positions from the race start. Yep. Max up 15 positions. Just like incredible drives at this point for both of those drivers. Norris passes Russell in lap 30. Mm-hmm. And then we end up having a safety car in lap 30 for because of Hulkenberg.
But well, no, then the safety car was just because of the weather. Hulkenberg was already.
Thank you. Yes.
Which I think apart from the qualifying antics with the virtual safety car, sprint race with the virtual safety car being delayed, and the qualifying with that red flag coming out late, the FIA in terms of the race and this weekend did everything amazingly. They learned from previous mistakes. We got the race earlier, of course, an hour and a half earlier, and that was to open up a window so that we didn't run the risk of not having a race or having a shortened race because of losing daylight. So I thought that was brilliant and something that they learned really from Belgium in 2021, that they were always saying on the broadcast, why didn't we just have this earlier? It wasn't raining earlier and we could have got a race in. And I think they definitely learned from those mistakes this time around in terms of just dropping a safety car when the weather got a little bit too worse, slows everyone back down. I think a VSC would have also been decent, but you leave it up to a driver's interpretation. I think a safety car a safety car will bunch everyone back up so there'll be more spray, of course. So maybe a virtual safety car could have been a bit better in that sort of instant, because it was only going to rain like that hard for 5 minutes.
But when that safety car came out for the rain on lap 30, I thought they were going to red flag it because it was so bad. I thought they were going to stop for a while and wait for the rain to die down and then go back out. But then, of course, lap 32, while the safety car is out, Franco Colapinto crashes out under a safety car, causing a red flag. It was such a hard day for Williams. Like, you got to feel for James Vowles. The whole team. You saw the clips of the mechanic, and he's just like, oh, fuck. It's like they like cut to him during qualifying when Albon crashed out, and then they cut to him in the race when Franco Colapinto crashed out. And this guy was just like, you know, he probably is like working on no sleep.
Yeah. Like, at the end of a triple header as well.
Ton of coffee. Yeah. End of a double header, triple header. Like, really, really rough day for the whole team. You got to feel for him.
Yeah.
But red flag comes out. They do a full, so they're going to do a full restart. Everybody goes back to the pit lane. And then you hear Norris on the radio, so defeated, going, I guess everyone can just change their tires for free now, huh?
Yeah.
He's so upset.
Like, it's a weird situation with that, because it's been something that's always been there in Formula One. And you always propose those questions, be like, oh, but what if we change the rules so that drivers can't change under the red flag? Or if you change under the red flag, you automatically go to the back of the pack. But it's one of those things that there will always be drivers who benefit and lose out no matter what you did. We had safety car rules back in the 2000s, the noughties, where if a safety car comes out, you weren't allowed to pit. And in doing so, if you were able to pit before, hence why Crashgate happened, that Fernando Alonso boxed before, and then they caused a safety car, and therefore nobody else was allowed to pit. Fernando Alonso inherited the race lead and was able to win the race there. That's the sort of stuff that can happen as well. You benefit those who make the earlier pit stop compared to the late. I'm a big believer that you make your own luck, especially in racing. Those at the front took that gamble. They stayed out on the wets, hoping that there'd be some sort of safety car or red flag, knowing that in these conditions, it's quite likely, and it pulled off. But it also, the FIA could have allowed it to continue. Colapinto might not have crashed, and the safety car or red flag wouldn't have come out, and you've got Lando Norris and George Russell on brand new intermediate tyres. It would be so much faster towards the end of the race than Ocon, Gasly, and Max Verstappen, and would have got those guys. So it would have been a huge gamble that didn't pay off. So it's one of those things that you can argue either way that these rules should be changed or whatever, but it will always benefit someone no matter what, and other drivers will not. So if we change the rules, then someone else will be complaining later on down the line, being like, well, this is stupid. Yeah.
I actually really disagreed with Lando Norris's comments after the race when he said, oh, it was luck, it wasn't talent. Yeah, I actually think it was a combination of strategy, calculated risk, and yes, a little bit of luck, but they were running the simulations. They were like thinking about what the different outcomes would be and what their best chance. I'm speaking specifically for Alpine here, like what their best chance was of getting a podium. And that was staying out and waiting to see if they got a red flag and it paid off.
Yeah.
And you got to give them credit. And it was so funny to hear how pissed George Russell was on the radio at the same time, being like, I told you we should have stayed out. And he started cursing, which like, I feel like is not very characteristic of him.
Yes. Did you watch the team radio from before? I think they recently released their team radio videos, but he was literally before being like telling them, this is going to be red flagged. It's got to be red flagged. It's way too worse. It's going to be red flagged. So let's stay out. Yeah. And then they're like, box. He's like, no, I'm not boxing. It's going to be red flagged. And then they're like, oh no, it was sort of like he was going on a rant saying it's going to be red flagged. And it's like, understood. Box. So like completely ignored him. And he's like, no, it's going to be red flagged. I'm not coming in. And they're like, no, you are boxing. You are coming in now. And at some point, of course, you do have to trust the team because they have more information. Like they can see the radar and they could possibly see that there's rain for the next, you know, 15 minutes, or it's only going to last for 2 minutes or 1 minute now. And it will be stopped raining. There'll be no more rain till the rest of the race, for example. So in essence, you have to trust the team. But at the same time, they should have also trusted their driver.
He must be pissed, because if they had listened to him, he probably would have won this race. Possibly.
Yeah. It would have definitely been up there. Because Lando took him after the box.
Yeah, because I don't know how well he could have defended with Max at the front in the wet. But like George Russell could have won this race if they had listened to him. So who knows?
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Then it was very funny going to the pit lane. You saw every car being covered by like a 10 by 15 pop-up tent. Mm-hmm. It looked like a college football tailgate party. Mm-hmm. We had the rolling restart with that. Was it Esteban Ocon overtook Max, right?
Ocon led from there. Max
thank
was
you.
Second
Ocon
in
led
position.
From there. Max was second. Max was thank third. You very much. Yeah. Carlos Sainz asking if these are new enters. He said they didn't feel like new enters, which is very funny. You saw your boy Joe and Ollie Bearman driving up the grass on the rolling yep. restart. Green flag at lap 34. Lando Norris went off the road at lap 34, allowing Russell to pass him. Ollie Bearman spinning out at lap 36. Carlos Sainz spins out lap 40. Yellow flag, safety car. Lap 42, green flag. Max overtakes Ocon right at the green flag almost immediately. Yeah. It's like he was timing out the switch from yellow to green flag.
Yeah.
And it's like he caught SD Bestie asleep at the wheel almost.
Yeah. It was such a shame because he was doing so well with Ocon. I really wanted Ocon to win this race because it would have been amazing.
Me too. I agree.
Amazing sort of story. And we'll talk about the Alpine relationship and what they had later on. But I think he was doing so well on the wet. Obviously, when it absolutely chucked it down in that stage just before the safety car came out for the weather, he pulled like a 5 second gap in one lap to Max was that yep. insane. And he was pulling out a gap of about 3 seconds before this safety car came out. So I think the clean air obviously massively helped and would yep. have made it more difficult for Max to get past. And I think we would have had a more entertaining last 20 laps of the race because I'd say this race is a solid 9 out of 10. What stopped it from being a 10 out of 10 was that battle for the race lead just kind of ended on lap 60. And then there was no real sort of major battles yeah. going on from lap 60 onwards.
Because once Max 65. Passed him, he was off to the races.
Yeah, like, 20 seconds on the road. Incredible.
Yeah, he ended up winning by like 19.47 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
Lap 44, yellow flag. Fernando Alonso goes off track, makes his way back on around lap 45. Norris and Piastri swap positions, but it was P6 and P7. So, like, it wasn't that. It's a few points, but it's not like that crucial to the championship fight at this point, especially with Max in the lead. Lap 46, Russell overtakes Leclerc for P4 when Charles Leclerc went off track. And then between then and like the mid 50s, you had this midfield battle between Lawson, Hamilton, and Checo Perez, which I thought was pretty exciting. I was into it. I don't know about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was exciting. It was, especially as it's sort of like, you know, again, he wants your seat, so he's going to keep you behind.
Totally. Yeah. Piastri ended up getting a 10-second penalty. And then Norris was like giving some serious snark on lap 62 when the engineers were like, can you try to get closer to Leclerc? And he's like, yeah, I know. I'm trying to do that. Like, what do you think I'm doing, dude? He was clearly getting frustrated. And I understand it was a very frustrating race for him where he could, especially starting on pole, he had the opportunity to really sort of make some ground in this championship fight. And then just things didn't end up going his way. But yeah, once Verstappen passed Esteban Ocon, he was just off and it was his race. Finished by almost 20 second lead. You know, like my favorite store at the mall, it was a big gap. Do they have gaps in the UK?
They do have gaps.
Okay.
They do have gaps.
Great. Yeah. But what an ending. seriously. I was like, I usually am indifferent when I respect Max Verstappen so much for mm-hmm. his driving ability and what an incredible driver he is, but I've never, and like, I don't hate Max Verstappen, but I'm kind of indifferent when he wins, especially since I was so numb to last season.
Yeah.
Where he was just absolutely so dominant, but it was so cool to see how much that win meant to him and meant to Red Bull. Like, I don't know if, with the exception of like him winning the Drivers' Championship for the first time, I don't know if I've seen that much joy on his face after winning a race.
I think when you go for a period of winning every single race but three, I think it was last season, you do get numb to it. I mean, you look at a driver who gets their first podium compared to a driver who's just is, you know, in a top car that keeps on getting podiums. Lewis Hamilton went for it, you know, where he would just sort of rehearse the same sort of speech every time. Thank you to the team, great race, getting there, Lewis, from Bono. Like, but you win so many times, you kind of are numb to that feeling. But then, of course, when Lewis won in Britain, the tears came out for the first time ever. And it's just like, because it's been so long. Obviously, it hasn't been as long for Max, but it's been nine races. And like I've said many, many times, I didn't think Max would win that many races past the summer break. I think I said he'd only win like two or three. And we've only had one of those so far. And, you know, we might not see him win again this season because the Red Bull isn't up there. And if the Red Bull continues to fall off next season before any major technical regulation changes, we might not see him win next season either. So it's one of those where it's like, it's been a while and he loves winning. Of course he does. And whilst he might not always care what people think about him and care about legacy and stuff like that, he still wants to win. He still wants to be up at the top. And I'm sure it did mean a lot to him to finally be back there and sort of realize, you know, I think he's realized over the last few months that not necessarily taking it for granted, but it sort of, as I say, numbed on him. Whereas now it's like this pure elation that back on top, loving this feeling again to be winning. And it was an exceptional drive. And I'm the same as you. Like, I think that Max Verstappen is one of the best drivers Formula One has ever produced. Mm-hmm. And whilst I do criticize the driving standards that I sometimes see, it's more from a point of being annoyed that he doesn't need to do it because he has these performances like this, because he is the best driver, that he doesn't need to push people off the track or anything like that, because he can get the move done cleanly. He can win the championship without those tactics because he is such an exceptional driver. And I know that Sky Sports said this on their commentary. I do think the Crofty went too much into this. Like, I've said that there, but it's just mentioned. I don't now need to keep on going on about that and mention it every single few seconds because there's nothing else happening out on track. And I know there's this whole big ordeal between British bias and Max Verstappen having the wrong passport in the sport. And whilst I do get the essence of that, Sky Sports is British broadcasters to, you know, a British audience. They're always going to be, you know, tailoring towards their fans. It's the same as if I watched Viaplay when I go over to my girlfriend's in the Netherlands. Whilst I don't speak Dutch yet, and it is something I am learning, I'm sure that their broadcast is going to be biased towards Max and on supporting Max, because you'd expect that. You'd expect that. You know, the Netherlands are fully supporting on
that. Yeah, they don't want to watch Via. They want to watch Ajax.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I also think this race is, it's just a reminder what a incredible driver he is.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Going for P17 in the wet, it's just like, it was just an incredible drive, not just from him, but also from Pierre Gasly. But like, I don't know if you know this, Hayden, but right after the race, they took Max Verstappen in to get some x-rays.
Okay.
The results showed that.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know where this is going.
He still has that dog in him.
Yeah, there we go. He definitely does. I mean, I said it at the beginning of this podcast, is it one of the best wet weather drives that we've had? I'm biased because I love Jenson Button and will always enjoy that race so much. But I think the fact that, yes, okay, there was a bit of luck in there in essence, but I've already said you make your own luck. They took that gamble and it paid off to get towards the front. But then to then extend that from 20 seconds when he was down in 17th, I think he had the pace miles above every single driver for the majority of the race. The only time that he got the better of was Esteban Ocon in that brief period when it absolutely chucked it down and gapped him. Other than that, Max Verstappen was clear by miles. I think if it rains again in a race, the whole grid should be afraid. No matter what car he is in, he will be able to pull out an incredible performance.
Yeah, but it was just great to see the joy from Max Verstappen. It was great to see the joy from Alpine. You saw the, we are in the middle of a constructors' battle. Yes, we are in the middle of a drivers' championship battle that is starting to sort of drop off, because I think mathematically Max can clinch in
he needs
Vegas
to get
now.
3 points on Verstappen in Vegas next time around. I think the championship's done, which I'm kind of happy of mainly because then I don't have to worry about arguments with my girlfriend when it comes sure. down to it. But yeah. I think it was a championship that's always going to be difficult anyway. But I think for Lando, this race showed that he isn't ready to fight for the championship. Whilst he has been in that fight, he isn't ready for it. And he is now hopefully going to be next season. There was far too many mistakes this weekend when the pressure was on him trying to catch up and in such a good position. And whilst, yes, the mistake, of course, from the team boxing him, there were mistakes from him out on track as well in these conditions, whereas Max was flawless. So I think a very similar situation to Verstappen in 2020, the season before they had a car ready to fight for the championship. Obviously, McLaren do have a car that is ready to fight for a championship, but they were playing catch up. I think this season is a learning season. Iron out those mistakes so that you can go full ham into next season. And hopefully for us, we get a nice championship battle, at least between Piastri and Norris, but then hopefully between a lot of other drivers on the grid too.
Agreed. But I also think this race was just like the perfect cherry on top to what has been an incredible Formula One season.
Yeah.
It's like, what a great way for Alpine in their season to end their driver pairing of Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly. Classic enemies to lovers trope. Yep. And what incredible form Pierre Gasly has been in as of late. His qualifying pace in that Alpine has been incredible, and a car that objectively is inferior to a lot of the other cars on the grid, which they even admit. His qualifying pace has been incredible. His ability to finish in the points, he's just in like incredible form. And I think these last three rounds have reminded us what a good driver Pierre Gasly is, because I think for much of the season, we've forgotten about him.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's obviously a lot easier when, if you're at the back, you are talked about a lot because you're like, they're in the mud, they're having an absolute stinker. But then when you're in that kind of mid pack and you're just quietly working away, then I think that you do go under the radar. And I do think his performance this weekend went under the radar because Max went from P17 to P1. But as you say, Gasly made up 10 positions in this race in an Alpine. And I don't think that should go undismissed. I think it was an incredible drive. And Gasly, a top performer. I think Alpine have got two great drivers in their team. Maybe not world championship material, but two great drivers in their team. And it's a shame to see Esteban Ocon go, but of course exciting to see what Jack Doohan can do next season, of course. And it was a shame that things didn't really work out for that relationship and that partnership. And obviously having two French drivers in a French team, of course, is something that they would love as well.
Yeah.
But this was just incredible for them. The fact that they scored, I think it was 33 points total to take themselves from being in P9 to P6 or P7 in the championship, P6 in the championship. $30 million swing, that is, if they can hold on to that position just from one weekend, which is a crazy, obviously, amount of money and something that can mean so much to those teams lower down the field.
And you saw how much it meant to the team. You saw not just the drivers, but you saw Alpine greeting them as they, you know, parked their cars in Parc Fermé.
Yeah.
You saw them, the Alpine team members, watching Pierre and Esteban kind of on the podium. You know, they were crying. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what sports is all about.
Yeah.
Aiden. Yeah. It was the best. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, this is why I'm a big advocate for Formula One to never become a spec series, and for domination is always also an important part of any sport. Whilst I would not like to see a last season where one team dominates, I would always like to see, you know, you had three teams, maybe four teams in the mix up the top, then you have your back markers behind. But then you have these results that pull off, and if it was a spec series, if it was a series where teams are a lot closer and would have more opportunities, you wouldn't get amazing moments like this where you have Alpine, who starts off the season last. You know, they really, really struggled to then be at the end of the season pulling off a double podium. Like, that is incredible. Usually, amazing. Sometimes you might just pull off the odd one podium, especially in a race like this weekend. But to pull off a double podium as well is absolutely incredible. And you would miss out on moments like that with teams celebrating so much for those rare tastes of glory. Of being on the podium.
Say magnifique. They say variety is the spice of life. And this year's Brazilian Grand Prix, officially known as the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, gave us black pepper. It gave us garlic. It gave us bay leaves. It gave us sal grosso. It gave us malagueta pepper. It gave us coriander. And it was exactly what we as Formula One fans needed.
Yeah, certainly so. It's a shame that we haven't got a championship battle this season, because honestly, this has been one of the greatest seasons we've had a Formula One for such a long time. If only we started after the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, I think this season would be unbelievable, because we'd have like four drivers fighting for the championship. But that's the way Formula One is sometimes. I think we just need to remember that these races as individual events, and it's just been absolutely incredible to watch this sport this season.
We do still have a hot, hot constructors battle.
We do. But it always goes under the radar. I think, Constructors' Championship is always that one that, do people really care about it too much, like as fans? I think maybe I'm a minority.
I think people care when Ferrari is involved.
Yes.
And to a lesser degree when McLaren is involved. Because we've talked about this before. Those really are the only two teams that have dedicated fan bases that aren't exclusively tied to drivers.
Yeah.
Like there are people who will always be Ferrari and McLaren fans, regardless of who's driving there, and to a lesser degree, Alpine, if you're French. But like everyone else just, follows their drivers and they follow their people. So I do feel like Tifosi care that Ferrari has an opportunity to take the constructors' title off of McLaren right now.
Yeah. And it's getting close and it was getting exciting. We've got a Vegas next, which could wrap up the championship. And I was thinking about this. Vegas, I would love to see as a track that is actually the season finale, because what a place to win a title decider at the end. And you just go out partying. But we'll save that for the preview later on in a couple of weeks' time. But Brazil, what rating would you give that out of 10? I've already said a 9.
I think I'd also make it a 9 out of 10. It might be my favorite race of the season.
Well, Brazil definitely provided, as you said, the spice of life. Brilliant.
Obrigado.
Yeah. Obrigado, Brazil. brilliant stuff. Really enjoyable. We'll be back later on in the week to talk about the latest Formula One news. Make sure you check out the WTF1 socials for all of the latest gossip and news as soon as it drops. And of course, make sure you're following on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to at the moment. Go follow the amazing James Coker on his socials and make sure you check myself out as well. And we will see you later on the week with another podcast. Until then, have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Ciao.